you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for tuning into the Twilight Histories podcast. Today you will hear a mind-bending story by Tristan Verboven. It's about time-traveling archaeologists with a kind of Umberto Eco feel. If you enjoy this show, please support Tristan and the other podcasters by becoming a patron of the Twilight Histories. When you sign up, you'll get tons of shows only available to our Patreon supporters, plus pre-releases of shows long before you see them on this feed. Summer is fast coming to a close, and the leaves are starting to turn, but you need not feel sad. Right now, you could be planning your next big adventure, and wow, do we have one for you. We have rented a castle in France, and we're selecting a small group of Twilight Histories fans to join us. There are still early bird discounts available, but those will not last. Go to the website at twilighthistories.com to find out how you can be part of this incredible adventure. And just before we start, I have a podcast to recommend to you. History Impossible is a rising star. You can easily hear the connection with hardcore history, but History Impossible also shares gravity with shows like Martyr Maid, Inward Empire, and History on Fire. It's dark and brooding, and I'd say significant. It's like the war correspondent who rummages in the aftermath of battle for dark secrets. History Impossible shines a mirror on our humanity in a way that might make you feel uncomfortable. But perhaps that's what we need to grow. Listen to History Impossible. And now for today's show, The Object by Tristan Verboven. Enjoy.
Your profile says you are interested in archaeology. That is a popular area of interest amongst travelers. If only the ancient Romans knew, we would be carefully scraping away the layers of dust covering their everyday lives. Or if the Vikings ever thought historians of the future would be the ones to finally dig up their hoards. Or the skulls of nomad hunters on the African steppes would ever see again the light of day. Has the thought ever even crossed our own minds? What remains of ours will someday be displayed in museums? What noble savages will they see in us? In our symbols and fragments, in our bones. There are others just like you, but they live in a future where the past is the only time there is, where the only things are things that were. So sit back, relax. You will meet them shortly.
The world outside seems like something out of a gritty gangster movie from the 1970s. The cab has that smell of air freshener mixed with sweat and cigarette, lingering in the bleak layer of grime that covers everything. And on the plexiglass partition, scratched and worn, is a taxi license of a man wearing a floppy hat, the back of which is all you can see of him.
Been driving a cab for 20 years. Before that, my old man was a cabbie, so I've seen a lot. A lot of people coming through. Takes all kinds, believe me.
He rolls down the window. A gust of city din wafts in, doing little to improve the air quality. He rolls it up again.
What a way to make a living, I tell ya.
He mumbles to himself and then raises his chin and calls out to the rearview mirror.
I never had a fare ask me to take them to the city dump. I mean, I've seen it all, Mac, no joke.
He continues to drive, occasionally tilting his head back again to look through the mirror.
I'm just trying to make conversation, you know, I work a lot of hours.
The whole scene suddenly disappears with a swish, and the cab becomes a colorless pod. A figure sits facing you.
Sorry about that. I thought that might help your transition, but I realize that it's probably a few years off.
The figure is neither a man nor a woman, but a froggish-looking person.
Call me Sawyer,
says Sawyer.
Maybe I can find something that you'd like. I'll keep trying. Hang on. There's not really any data on you, so it's kind of no use. You're probably wondering what's happening, and I'm sure this is all very overwhelming. Anyway, you'll have plenty of time today to log in some preferences, and in the meantime, I should brief you.
Both you and Sawyer are wearing the same thing. A featureless bodysuit revealing only the head and hands, the rest blending into the environment.
As you can guess by now, it's not the 70s.
Windows open to reveal the outside world. A rich world of lush greenery passing quickly.
But we are headed for the dump, so, or what used to be the dump. I mean, it was the dump back in the 70s. I have to calculate how long ago that was, but it doesn't really matter. At this point, we're really just talking about depth.
The pod feels like it's slowing down, and the greenery has opened into a broad clearing. Before it is possible to utter a word in edgewise, Sawyer continues chattering.
I understand that it's going to be a little bit strange at first, which is why I put you in a taxicab scenario, but now I realize that it's kind of based on cinematic tropes and a bunch of cliches.
Sawyer sees the dumbfounded look on your face and stops for a moment.
I don't know when to stop talking sometimes.
Then the moment of silence becomes too much.
I should explain.
The pod stops, and one side of the apparatus opens to the outside world.
It's pretty real out there, but you're probably okay with that.
There's a small platform that leads down the side of the hill to a worksite, and a cluster of pods and some equipment.
You'll be working with Vance. He's an all right fellow. I mean, he knows a fair bit about digging, and he'll probably need your help on this one.
Sawyer beams an excited look on his face.
You know, they've found an object.
When you do not respond with the same level of excitement, Sawyer continues with bright eyes.
This one might actually be intact, so we're pretty excited. We're going to need your help to authenticate it. It's kind of new to the canon.
Sawyer still does not detect your excitement.
It's from your time. Anyway, you'll see. Vance will explain it to you.
Once your feet are on the platform, the suit transforms into work clothes. Bright orange with reflector strips and heavy boots. The causeway into the forest soon gives way and your boots begin to make that familiar crunching sound on the earth. Vance makes quite the different impression. He's strapping and confident and exudes a burly masculinity that is well suited to the rugged coniferous environment.
Take in that air,
he says, filling his lungs.
Don't worry about the bugs. I got this place droned off.
In the middle of the clearing is a large drill attached to a tube-like pod.
Well, I'm in that one. You take the other,
he says, pointing his chin towards one of the two egg-shaped pods behind you.
I take it Sawyer probably brought you up to speed.
He stares off into space.
I'm not getting any data at all. You are very new.
Some strange activity starts to form in the corner of your eye, and it slowly starts to come into focus.
Right, take some getting used to.
The world around you becomes enhanced and gives additional information about measurements, density, and velocity.
It'll show you a bunch of text at first until you get used to it, and then in a few minutes it'll really start making sense.
The data starts to appear and disappear as the system gradually learns your patterns.
Before you know it, you don't even know it. Just happens.
Sure enough, the information seems to enter your mind with less and less effort on your part.
Let me show you around,
says Vance, swiping the area in front of him. A cross-section of the area shows several layers of activity in the earth below the drill.
I've been on this blanket for a number of jobs now. On-site tech tasks. They're peaking in favor right now, especially on outlying human tasks. And not to mention a lot of interest in that particular period. The latest samples go all the way down to the 1970s, so that's pretty good.
Vance shows a table with several cylindrical columns of muck.
So, mostly muck. A couple of fragments. Plenty of material to harvest. Rare isotopes. But then this came up.
Vance indicates a discolored segment of the sample.
So you got your polyurethane and then a gap, and then what looks like an object.
He looks at you with wild excitement in his face.
So now that you're here, let's have a look.
He lowers a showerhead and sprays a gentle mist. And slowly the grime washes away to reveal the smooth surface of a soda can. Then, little by little, the color comes out. The unmistakable logo of a can of Orange Crush. Vance marvels, his eyes watering with emotion.
Ah, it's beautiful.
Carefully washes away every morsel of dirt.
The condition is superb. I don't think we have a more perfect sample.
He looks you in the eyes.
So, what can you tell me about it?
It's a can of pop, you reply. Orange Crush. Vance returns his gaze to the object.
Scan says it's probably about 1976 to 1980, judging by the fuselage and metallic content, and of course, the depth and proximity profile confirms that.
He carefully picks it up with his gloved hand, immediately gasping.
Whoa! The closure's still intact.
He's stunned where he stands.
It's an unusual one, too. I've never seen this one before.
He hands it over, and sure enough, the top is quite unusual. Instead of the typical retractable lever latch that pushes the can open, this one simply has two holes, a large one and a small one. I remember these, showing Vance the top of the can. You push the small one in first and then the big one, if I remember correctly. I haven't seen one of these since I was a kid. Vance is busy pulling up files.
According to a contemporary source, he only made these from 1977 to 1978, and only in certain regions. Known as pop, or soda, or sometimes soft drink.
He looks at you with a glowing smile.
This is an extremely rare find. This can is perfectly intact. The product is still inside. Do you realize what this means?
He stumbles backward in his seat.
I have to sit down.
He stares giddy into the can, slowly turning it in his hand.
So, tell me about soda. Or, what did you call it? Pop.
It's a sweet, bubbly drink, you reply. You usually drink it very cold. Vance presses you for more. I don't know, you could pour it in a glass with some ice or drink it with a straw. Some people like to drink it right out of the can.
Interesting. So how does it taste?
It tastes orangey. Definitely no orange in it, though, but it tastes kind of like orange. Vance examines the side of the can to see if he can get any information.
So it tastes like orange, but there's no orange in it. But you have real oranges available.
Yeah, it's orange flavor.
Well, I'm looking forward to tasting it,
he says, sniffing the can. You're going to open it?
I'm not going to open this one. I'll open it in there.
He nods towards the pod.
We've never had one of these. But once we put it through, we'll finally find out what it tastes like. And that period is pretty complete. We're just missing a few details like this.
Vance sits with the can for a few more moments, weighing it in his hand and going through the motions of opening it.
I just love to savor the real, you know?
He takes one good last look of it and places it in a globe.
I'll stay here and do more digging. You should take it in yourself.
There's a pause. Take it in where? You reply.
Well, the Vatican, of course. You must know the Vatican. I mean, it's been there a long time. I'm pretty sure the Vatican was there during your time. You'll just have to find out, he chuckles. They like everything done by hand there, so somebody's gotta take it in.
He hands you the globe.
You'll like Rome. It's pretty much like it was. They preserve it well.
Vance walks up with you to the line. The whole time he sneaks peeks at the object, until the pod finally arrives.
Enjoy the library,
he says with a smile.
I'm glad you're doing. That place kind of gives me a weird feeling. It's like looking behind the curtain.
The door opens and you step in.
If you feel like staying on, I mean after Rome, we could have you check out the platform for authenticity. It could really use an audit from someone, period, like yourself. There's quite a bit of stuff, especially 80s, that's, you know, iffy. A lot of other stuff from this dig that you can help us identify.
I'll see how it goes, you reply.
These blankets are really good human task,
he says with a wink.
You'll get some good access. And there's a real event coming up. Might be just your thing.
You nod like you understand what he just said and close the pod door. For a split second, the pod is blank. It is a featureless void with an oval suspended above, and then the system comes to life. Before you are several options. Mid-century modern lounge, rococo sitting room, an assortment of designer armchairs, and as soon as your gaze stays on one tile for more than a moment, the pod immerses in it. The Edwardian library seems comfortable enough. Your body sinks into a lush, velvety chaise. The room is a spectacle of opulent, period furniture. A marble fireplace flanked with patterned wallpaper and ferns. Each surface of the broad room is a home to an exotic work of art. Ivory elephants, Turkish rug, African masks, and East Asian porcelain. The library is a carefully curated assortment of fiction and science. And outside the tall windows is a quiet street lined with whimsical townhouses. You try another one. 1950s suburban home. The edges of the armchair square off into green tweed upholstery, and the fireplace morphs into a smaller metal construction as the wallpaper becomes exposed brick. The room is now dominated by a broad mahogany cabinet with knobs and a tiny gray screen. The rug has become a deep red shag broadloom with swanky space-age coffee table. Everything is real to the touch. The knobs give way on the television and the thick impasto on the decorative modern painting. After exploring a few more scenarios, the option expands to food and beverage, soundscape, and companionship. Everything from armchair conversations on a variety of subjects to playing sports or martial arts, even the Sultan's harem. By this time, the platform has begun to predict your taste. It sees that you are currently most comfortable with the familiar, and it builds around you a 20th century train wagon. The only thing that is the same throughout each experience is the glowing egg that sits just out of view above your head.
Ticket, please!
The conductor holds out his hand, indicating the paper stub between your fingers.
We are arriving in Rome shortly, sir.
The view out the window is the telltale rolling hills of Tuscany. Adorable little hilltop villages and bucolic scenes whizzing by. As it occurs to you, this is probably not real. The view slowly transforms, and what now appears out the window becomes very real. At first, the view is several minutes of sustained rich forest. It is going by at an enormous speed, so you focus your view on the horizon that appears untouched but for a few pod clusters. Occasionally, they cluster around villages where old buildings stick out like relics of an old age. Suddenly, the forest changes abruptly into a rush of industrial rows and mechanized zones. Then quickly back to untouched wilderness. The view disappears as the pod shoots into a tunnel, and the lovely Italian countryside of another age reappears. The pod lets you out at the gates of the Vatican City in Rome.
Please proceed on foot while the pod awaits at location.
Stepping onto the cobblestone, the door shuts behind you and the pod disappears. All around is the city of Rome as it has been for ages. The broad boulevard is full of small groups taking in the afternoon sun. Still, there's an eeriness to it all. Your clothing has reverted back to the work detail that you had been wearing at the dig. And with the globe in hand, there is nowhere to go but towards the great square that spreads out in front of the majestic basilica. On either side stand the Swiss Guard, their blue and gold stripes with feathered helmets and pole arm. So too are priests and nuns in their habits. A man in black robe with bright red sash and skull cap approaches from across the square.
That must be the relic!
His hands are before him solemnly, just below a magnificent gold cross hanging from his neck. He holds up his hands before him as he gets closer to the object. Once he is standing a few paces away, he crosses his chest and says a quiet prayer before reaching out to relieve you of the globe.
Welcome to the Eternal City,
he says, bowing his head. He leads you through some grand doors and down the long, echoey marble passages of the Vatican cloister. The presence of this new object breaks the tranquility of every room it passes, as more robed men stop what they're doing to catch a glimpse. In front of a decorative cast-iron elevator, the cardinal turns to you.
I'm sure you'd like to see the library.
The door opens, and the floor of the lift creaks quietly as you both put your weight on it. Throughout the long, slow descent down the mineshaft, the cardinal does not betray a single moment of impatience. The device comes to a stop in the center of a network of subterranean passageways. The walls are adorned with an extraordinary collection of artworks, starting with icons and medieval triptychs, and moving on to oil paintings and biblical scenes, gradually getting larger until an entire section of dazzling Renaissance pieces covers the walls.
Wow, how many pieces do you have in the collection?
You ask, not really knowing what to say. The cardinal answers, puzzled.
Why, all of them, of course.
He stops at a large vault door and rings a bell by tugging on a rope. The last painting on the wall is a small portrait. It stands out from the rest in its modesty and style. It's an expressionist piece, a clown face formed of aggressive brushstrokes and dark tones, revealing a wretched creature with eyes full of hate and sadness.
Rualt was a devout man. Unlike the other impressionists of his time, he had the unique ability to see people for who they really were. He could see past the mask, the way God sees us when nobody else is watching.
There's just enough time to take in one last look at the ghastly clown face, and in it, his essence, his true self, full of lust and lechery, leaves an image in your mind of pity and forgiveness. The vault door opens to a factory floor, men working at monitors, operating machines.
Please take off the equipment and put on a tunic. We do things the old way here.
He hands the object over to men in similar tunics who immediately go to work examining it. After giving you a moment to change in the adjacent vestiary, the cardinal takes you through every step of the elaborate process. Measurement, material analysis, X-ray, scanning, logging, documenting, until the final stage where the soda can is placed in a box. And when the box is opened again, it reveals two identical soda cans. The two objects are carefully removed from the box, each placed on a small trolley, and they are perfectly alike. wheeled side by side through a passageway deep into the mine. The cardinal motions you to follow the procession. It walks slowly into a stunning spectacle. A passage as long and wide as a train tunnel, lined on either side with a startling collection of objects, beginning with small ones, some too small even to identify. Staples, marbles, pins, dice, pool balls, coffee mugs, each organized into similar groups, each sitting perfectly in the tiny recess in the wall, each with its identical self across from it. The shaft goes on so far that the end is all but a blur. The procession takes a turn down a passageway to reveal that there's a network of thousands of these tunnels. Two of everything. The procession stops at a segment of the tunnel, revealing hundreds of cans in various states and various types. Beer cans, soda cans, soup cans, diced tomatoes, tuna fish, each facing its exact same. The cardinal carefully places the cans facing each other in their empty recesses. And in a moment of reflection, they all bow their heads and mutter a quiet prayer. Then the ceremony is over. They all turn to return to their work. You stay for a moment to look carefully at the objects in their place. The cans are indeed perfectly alike, indistinguishable. You catch up with the holy men and join their long, quiet walk back to the factory. You break the silence and ask the cardinal, "So how can you tell which one's the original?" The whole procession stops and turns to you. The cardinal looks perplexed at first at your question, but then a sincere look of satisfaction crosses his face.
"Yes, exactly,"
he smiles.
"That is exactly what we do here."
That was The Object by Tristan Verboven. To support Tristan and all our podcasters, please join our Patreon community. And don't forget to visit the website to find out more about the Twilight Histories trip to France. It's going to be amazing, and I want you there. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.